From the Land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 15th day of April, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's from Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson out of Hollister, Missouri. And a bit later in the program, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day lower in the May corn down 6 3/4 at $3.19 1/4. July 3.26 3/4, 5 1/2 lower. In December, futures off 3 3/4 cents at $3.42 3/4. Next year's March corn at $3.55 1/2 down 3 1/2 cents. May beans and nickel lower, $8.42 the settlement price. July down 3 3/4 at $8.51 3/4. And November beans at $8.59 3/4. The new crop 5 3/4 lower. January futures of next year down 6 1/4 at $8.62 1/4. The bean oil futures 19 cents lower. The bean meal up $4.70. May wheat futures at 8 1/2 lower, $5.40 1/4 the settlement price. The July soft red down 9 1/4 at $5.40 1/2, and July hard red 4 cents lower today at $4.87. Live cattle futures April contract $94.72 1/2, $1.02 1/2 higher for the afternoon. June futures at $84.82 1/2, up $1.02 1/2 as well. April feeder 60 cents lower at $115.80. However, the May contract at $115.57 1/2, up $0.72 1/2. And lean hogs for the day at $45.60 in the lead. April down a nickel. May futures up $1.45 at $39.45. Crude oil 8 cents a barrel higher at $20.19. Ethanol futures unchanged at 94 7/10 cents. And heating oil 3 1/10 lower at $91 3/10 cents. Gasoline on the RBOB 73 cents, up a penny for the afternoon. We're now joined by Jackie Vick. She comes to us from Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri, to help us take a look at what happened in Chicago at the Board of Trade and to make sense of some of the grain flow across the whole of the planet. Hey, Jackie, thank you so very much for being with us on this Wednesday afternoon.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's start with the usuals for you: support and resistance, manage money, and export inspections.
Well, on support and resistance, we have May support at 326, 302, and 290 in corn. Resistance 336, 347, 360, and the crossover point between the downtrend and uptrend lines 325 1/2. July support 329, 295, and 274. Resistance 351, 364, and 375. Crossover point there is 324. And May beans support 821, 780, and 708. Resistance 860, 908, and 948. The long-term channel is 1148 to 762. Short-term channel is 1054 to 762, and it's getting narrower. We look at July beans. We have supported 829, 820, and 805. Resistance 866, 903, and 926. And the channel there is 975 and 829. And that channel is actually getting wider. When we look at managed money this week, wheat lost a little bit of its longs. It dropped from 22 down to 19,000 long. Corn is short 119. It was 138 last week, so it also improved. Beans went from being net short 2 last week to net long 12. Soy meal long 24 compared to 32 last week, so it lost a little bit of its longs. And soy oil net short 3 versus net long 4 last week. When we look at inspections, wheat exports are running 8% ahead of a year ago. That was 7% last week. Corn 36 behind a year ago. It was 37 last week. So corn continues to improve. And beans remain the same at 6% ahead of a year ago, the same as they were last week.
You know, much of the trade has been thinking that the soybeans have been lifted just a little bit or more supported. I'm wondering whether any of the reports that we get from USDA or other places support the idea that soybeans going into this 2020 growing season might have a better fundamental picture.
Well, they do. We had NOPA crush just came out actually at 11 o'clock this morning, and we saw a record crush of 181.4 million bushels. I mean, that is just amazing. It's higher. It was 166.2 in February and 170 in March of 2019. So, you know, this just eclipsed the highest record we've ever had before, was 176.9. So, you know, it certainly does say that there is some support there for the beans. And I think in the long run, we'll find even more support, especially we'll get into a little more when we get down into the South American situation.
Speaking of South America, why don't you go ahead and tell me a little bit about what you saw in last week's report. Both USDA released its supply and demand numbers, and there were numbers that came out from South America and their primary statistical agency.
Well, when you looked at, you know, the overall numbers, of course, we saw the carryout go up on the beans, you know, and that none of us were really thrilled with that. But then again, at the same time, we have to look at South America and what it's saying. And so Brazil came out now this week at 121 million metric tons versus the USDA being at 124.5. So that's 3.5 million metric tons, which is about 120 million bushels. Well, 140 million bushels, excuse me. Argentina came in at 50 compared to the USDA at 52. And you know, don't knock the USDA because of this. It's just that information comes very slowly. There's no question about it. And so totally between Brazil, Argentina, Paraguay, Bolivia, and Uruguay, they're expecting 186.8 compared to the USDA at 191.5. Now, when we look at the corn number at the world level, that also went up. Which wasn't, a great big surprise in a lot of cases, but it's just one of those situations where you look at the numbers coming out of Brazil. Brazil said 98 compared to 101, where the USDA is at. Argentina 49 versus 50, and so anyway, the other countries that I named before, they came in 151.4 million metric tons versus 156.5 for corn. And, you know, Brazil's Brazil itself is a really big exporter of corn. And so it's going to be really interesting when we look at the big picture all the way around and how this works out.
And we'll see more about that as they begin to export that crop. That won't come until June or July. So, well, about time we're in the middle of whatever happens this summer with the crop here in the United States. But the weather will also be viewing what has happened with the exportable crop or safrinha crop out of Brazil. Speaking of the United States, I know it's been a while, but what do you think of the supply and demand tables from USDA last week domestically for the old crop?
Well, I thought that, you know, when you looked at the bigger picture, you know, for the old crop, nothing was a big surprise as far as I was concerned, to be honest with you. When you looked at the numbers that came in, I know that there were a lot of people that were talking. They thought that we were going to drop to like a $3 average price on corn. Instead, we were at 380. They dropped us to 360, and I think that's really a lot more. There's a lot more common sense involved in that. We talked a little bit about beans going from 425 to 480. You know, most of the adjustments that were coming out of this these reports, corn got hit really hard by ethanol down 375 million bushels. They left exports the same. When you look at beans, there we actually gained on the crush, which kind of backs up what happened here today. And they took a hit on exports. Wheat itself didn't change an awful lot. We only lost a nickel, by the way, on the average bean price, 870 down to 865. And we saw the wheat carryout numbers go up too. And when we look at those, you know, we gained a nickel there on the price, which I thought was interesting, seeing the carryout went up. But in general, it's mostly, you know, it's mostly exports that are affecting everything that's happening here. Now, when you look at corn, I guess I was really impressed with the fact that they raised the feed by 150 million, which I think makes sense. Unfortunately, some of that's coming because the animals are being backed up into the into the country because they're just not processing as many. And yet we got hit with ethanol, 375 million down. And we only actually ended up total, when we total it all out, down 205 million. And I thought that that was really pretty good in general. And so I felt it was a good report just all the way around to get out of the way, you know, and let's step aside from this and move on. The big report that's coming is going to be May. You know, that's when we're going to find out more about the surveys that they're doing, you know, how much corn is really going to be lost out in the field. Hopefully we'll have an idea about that. And well, you know, we'll go from there.
Yeah, USDA did tell us they would be resurveying five states. They told us that earlier in the year, reminded us on this last report, and gave us some timelines as well. Four of the states will show up in May. However, North Dakota numbers will not apparently be done. I suppose that's because they're still in the middle of Harvest 19.
Well, they are. And according to their report that came out this week, they had 0.9 of 1 day considered to be a good harvest day last week. They did get 83% done, so they picked up 2% on the week. And, you know, I've been following through on this. 74.2 million left last week, supposedly 62.9, using a 75% of their regular yield just to due to all the problems that exist. But the interesting part, the topsoil moisture actually went up from 43 to 44, and subsoil went up from 36 to 39. That is not good news for them at all. And so I can see why, you know, they're not going to include them, because they're just not that close to being done.
Yesterday on this program, we talked about the agricultural energies, as we do each and every Tuesday. But I want to get your take on the deal that was struck and why crude oil has not moved, or at least it moved and then dropped back to $20 a barrel.
Well, you know, you just hit on something that we've just been ask over and over, you know, the deal's done. Why aren't the markets higher? You know, why isn't corn going back up? What's happening? Well, you know, I think if you boil it all down, Todd, this is my opinion, a 10% cut was likely something very welcome, just due to the fact that those countries are running out of storage space because nobody at this point is driving. So, you know, the demand is down. None of them are going to cut 10% just on their own. You know, that's just not going to happen. So I think this 10% cut was something that was actually, they were happy to see it happen. And it's a good thing. And eventually it will come into the marketplace, I think, if and when we start to see the opening of the country somewhat again. But that's what I've been telling everybody. It's a situation where you cannot expect the market to take off and go like a banshee when the demand situation hasn't changed.
Any final note around the planet that you've dug up we should talk about?
I dug up. Yes, I have dug up some notes. China, I thought that this was very good information for us to know. China bought 35.56 billion yuan, which would be $5.05 billion worth of farm goods from the United States in the first 3 months of 2010, which is up 110% from last year. They bought 7.81 million tons of soybeans from the U.S. in the first quarter, worth 21.88 billion yuan. That's up 210% from last year. Shipments of U.S. pork to China during the first quarter was up 640% from last year. And the value of the cargo has increased by 17 times to 3.04 billion yuan. And, of course, that's all related to, you know, swine fever. As far as Brazil goes, as of the third, Brazilian farmers sold about 71.5% of their 1920 soybean production. That's compared to 51.8 last year, and the average is 53.5. So they have aggressively taken advantage of the price increases. And that increase actually advanced 13% just in 1 month. So the prior record for soybean sales during March was 59.5, and that was in 2016. When we look at domestic soybean prices in Brazil, they hit record high levels during March, and that's primarily because of devaluation of the Brazilian currency and the increase in the U.S. dollar. So they sold, you know, a record amount of soybeans out of their old crop. And the dry weather in southern Brazil and northern Argentina is causing some issues. I've seen some pretty serious pictures on the Paraná River, which provides access the majority of Argentina's ports, as well as, you know, some of Brazil's ports. The water levels they feel are going to drop could drop to a 50-year low over the next 2 weeks. And that means that they have 3 foot less draft available for vessels. And they've been dredging, but they're still, you know, they're still loading at the Port of Rosario, but they're loading less tonnage. And this is what's important. The 3 feet less draft means that a Panamax vessel must reduce its load by 7,500 tons, which I thought that was very interesting to know. Soybean crops in Argentina advanced about 16.2% of the harvest compared to 16.9 last year, mostly because of weather. It keeps on interrupting, but it's one of those things that the early planted beans, 23.5% harvested, late planted beans are less than 1% harvested. So they too are experiencing weather issues. You know, they've got more rain in some areas in Argentina than what they want, and Brazil's got more dry in some areas than what they want. So those things could all eventually be quite positive for us.
If I did the calculations right, that's 275,000 bushels of soybeans per Panamax vessel. Hey, thank you so much, Jackie, for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate being here. Thank you. Take care.
You too, Jackie. Jackie Vakes is with Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Medium. Find us online at WILLAG.org. On this Wednesday, let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon, Drew.
Good afternoon. Hope you're enjoying the weather today.
No.
Didn't think so. I thought I'd throw it out, though, anyway.
It's a good day to put warm clothes back on and stay inside. And that means here in my part of the world, nothing's rolling or probably isn't rolling, though I've not been out of the house. I think farmers are content to just stand aside for the moment. So they'll want to know a couple of things for the Midwest, rainfall and temperatures, and probably ought to work that into what we've had and if there's been any damage done. And you can extend that to the hard red winter wheat growing areas as well.
Well, all right. We certainly have been cold, record cold this week, as everybody knows. And we are going to deal with it for just a little while longer, and then we're going to see a little temporary break. I say temporary because I'm still not convinced that we're not going to run into some cooler than usual weather a little bit later this spring in addition to this. But we did see some impressive cool air this past couple of days, and temperatures got down to the single digits and teens across the north half of the plains, teens and 20s in the central plains, and it looks like there were a few counties in southwest Kansas in hard red winter wheat country where there might have been a little bit of damage, with temperatures dropping yesterday morning down into some teens and lower 20s in areas where the crop was certainly well into the joint stage, if not pushing the boot. And in the case of pushing the boot, though, that was actually down in Texas and southern Oklahoma. And the temperatures in southern Oklahoma were not threatening, but there were some areas in west Texas that did get down into some 20s and maybe a little minor wheat there that might have got nipped. Before we go too much farther, I don't want to mislead anybody. All of the damage I'm referring to is very spotty, very limited in coverage. I don't think it's a big deal, but if you're the farmer that's producing that crop, it's a big deal. So it is important in that respect. Now, this morning we saw more frost and freezes occurring from the heart of the Midwest down into the Tennessee River Basin. And some of the wheat in Tennessee and Kentucky was not only booted, but it was also beginning to head. And so there's some crop there where temperatures got into the middle and upper 20s this morning that probably caused some damage. But those two states, again, don't represent a large percentage of the nation's total wheat. But again, if you're the producer that has dealt with the damage, it's not a pretty picture. Now, we will get away from all of this cold over the next few days, and we will bring back increased rainfall potentials especially in the second week of the outlook. Now, this week we've got a rain event coming up here that will occur tomorrow into Friday that will go right across the heart of the Midwest from the Central Plains, Nebraska and Kansas, into Ohio and touching upon southern Michigan and parts of Kentucky. It'll be a quick event. No big heavy rains are coming from this, but we will still have moisture. And after it passes, we might be able to get a several-day period of dry weather to take place. The temperatures will gradually warm during that period, but about the middle of next week, we'll have another chance for storminess to occur in parts of the lower Midwest and also in the Delta and the southeastern states, with one more system behind that in the last weekend of the month. So it's putting it all together, it's kind of not a good scenario for some, but there will be an opportunity for progress to be made, and we will get away from the frost and freeze risk, I think, especially in the lower Midwest southward for the next couple of weeks.
Are there dry conditions that you're worried about in the United States too?
Yes, the hard red winter wheat country again is still struggling with some lack of moisture, especially in the high plains region, eastern Colorado, western parts of Kansas, straight southward into a part of New Mexico. Now, there is some area in the Texas Panhandle that's done relatively well with precipitation periodically here this season, but they too need to see more moisture. In the last 30 days, actually, we've seen less than 25% of normal precipitation in the heart of Kansas and also from southeast Colorado into the northwest part of the Texas Panhandle. So there's definitely some real estate out there that could use a drink of water.
What about the Black Sea area?
The majority of that region continues to deal with a lack of moisture, too. It's not critically dry because the temperatures have been cooler than usual here in the past couple of weeks, and so there's not much demand for moisture. And so areas from Romania through Ukraine over to Kazakhstan are doing okay for the situation at the moment, but there is definitely going to be a need for more moisture in all of this region as we go forward into the warmer days and weeks that lie ahead. It's not a crisis today, but it's something we want to keep an eye on for the next couple of weeks, at least until they get better moisture.
Have dry conditions shown up in Brazil? That would be normal for second crop or safrina corn.
That's true to a certain degree. The big concern here is actually because we planted some of this crop a little late and for a few areas a lot late, and reproduction for some of that safrina corn in the southern production areas will occur in mid-May. And that's late enough that we could lose a lot of the soil moisture that's present right now. You're absolutely right that seasonal rains usually end about this time of the year, and we have done that in parts of the production region. But not all of the southern safrina corn production region has good soil moisture right now. And so if we take this down the road 4 weeks from now, we could have a very short moisture profile at the time of reproduction. So there may be potential here for a little yield loss if we can't get some unusually late rain to evolve.
You keep an eye on it, and we'll keep checking in with you. Thanks so much.
All right. You have a great day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.